This is Jean Dickman and Barbara Burns interviewing Leon Paradise for Oral History on December 10th, 1997. And these are additional questions to ask in to supplement the first two takes. Leon, a lot about your maternal grandparents and your mother's side of the family, but we neglected your father's side of the family. So tell us a little bit about them, and please give us their full names, too.
Okay, my father's mother's name was Sarah Pickus.
Spell. P-I-C-K?
P-I-C-K-U-S. And my grandfather's name was Abed Mayer. I guess it's A-B-B-E, Mayer, M-A-Y-E-R, Pickus.
A-Y-E-R.
Yes. They were both dead when I was born. They were dead before my parents were married. And I really what I recall is that when they came to this country, I think that they owned a small grocery store and that my grandmother did the work and my grandfather studied.
Learned.
Now, I think I heard that from my mother and not from my father. My father really spoke very little about his parents or really about his family. My mother was much more involved with his family, with her family, than my father was with his. My father was the youngest of 10, and many of them were much older.
I don't suppose you know all nine other names that were...
Well, I can probably come pretty close.
And can you do them in order?
I can't do them all in order, but the oldest was a daughter named Lena. And then there were a number of girls, Esther, Mary, then his brothers were Jacob, Joseph, Samuel, and my father, Herman, and Bertha was another of the sisters. That should probably bring us up to about 8. And a couple of them have gotten away.
That's right.
And let's see.
7, 8.
And I probably met all of them at one time or another, but except for Jake, who died, I think, before I was born.
And he didn't have, I mean, did he have contact with him?
He had contact. His close relationship was with his brother, Sam, who was the second youngest. My father was the youngest, and he was the second youngest. And those were the only two, I think, that he was really close to.
That was Herman?
My father's name was Herman.
And your mother's name, I think we have her name.
Corinne Weatherhorn Pickus.
Corinne.
Before she was married, it was Corinne Marcel Weatherhorn.
Didn't you get Pincus from everybody?
I think there probably weren't any Pincuses in Aberdeen any more than there were any Pickuses, and the name they were used to was Pickus.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And your brother is Herman also.
Herman Mayer Pickus. Herman Jr., actually, which is unusual.
That is unusual in those days.
Mm-hmm.
And tell us a little bit more about him.
My brother?
Yeah.
My brother. Let's see. We are, I don't know what his comments would be on what I'm about to say, but we are very close.
I got that.
Yeah. We don't necessarily talk about things, but it is still there. I adore him. He's very good to me, at least as far as I'm concerned. Mm-hmm. I think I was very bossy when we were growing up.
He's younger.
Yes, he's about less than 2 years younger, but I was very bossy. And it was okay for a long time, and then, I don't know, somewhere along the line he rebelled, and it hurt my feelings, but it probably was a big plus overall. And I resented his rebellion, the fact that he ditched me, didn't do everything I told him anymore. But I was absolutely convinced he could not get along in this world unless I told him what to do. How would he know? But he's a very interesting person. He's very much his own self. He's very honest, and he's very funny. He's got a tremendous sense of humor. Very funny guy.
What does he do?
He used to be in the construction business, but he retired when he was 51 years old. He sold out, and he considers golf his work at this point. Uh-huh. He used to play tennis, but his knee got bad. Uh-huh. So.
Okay. Very good. And he's married?
He's married, and he has three sons, all of whom are married.
The sons are?
His oldest son is Michael.
Do you have an age for him?
Let's see. Michael is about, let me just think a minute. He's about 43 or 44. David is probably about 42, who's the second son. And the third son is Jonathan, who's probably about 40.
Bang,
bang, bang. Oh, exactly. Very close.
I also wanted to know more about your trip to Beijing. Remember I told you I was going to ask
you
about
that? Yes, you did.
You kind of passed over it, and that was quite a trip.
It was quite a trip,
so
yes. I had been thinking about it.
You know, you must have felt very strongly about
being
there.
I did.
And
I felt,
why?
I sort of decided to go, and then I decided not to go. Anyway, through talking to friends, whatever, I did finally decide to go. Most of my good friends took a train all across, all across Asia to get there. But that was a month-long trip to end up in Beijing, and I just didn't feel like I could have
to get
a month.
From
well, they stopped in cities. It was called the Peace Train.
Oh,
and it was sponsored by the International League of Women for Peace and Freedom. Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. And it was called the Peace Train, and it had about 225 women and a few men, maybe about 10 men on the train. This is the trip I didn't take, incidentally.
Yeah.
And there were probably about 15 people, including at least one man from Pittsburgh, on that trip. And most of my close friends that I knew who were going to Beijing were on that train, and I just didn't feel I could do it. And then ultimately I joined up with another group of people, many of whom were from Pittsburgh. And I was in China for 2 weeks and about 5 or 6 days in Beijing at the UN 4th International Conference on the Status of Women. It was a tremendous experience. I think it's the only time in my life that I felt like I was at and participating in a historical event. There were between 35 and 40,000 women there from practically every country in the world who certainly shared concerns which centered on women's rights. Now, depending on what kind of a country you were from, your focus would be on different rights, the kinds of concerns that American women would be very different from women in Iran, but nonetheless, it was an exhilarating and impressive experience. You got to meet people, women from all over the world, and it was just enormously impressive. And also, it was very moving. When you find out the nature of the lives of women in other countries in this world, it's a searing experience.
Mm-hmm. You were a representative to the forum, is that correct?
Yes, I was. The terminology now escapes me. Each country had its own official delegation. I was not a member of the American official delegation, which probably had maybe 20 to 25 women in it. But then there were, anybody could go. And
right.
you had
and
to get.
To the forum.
To the forum. That's right.
Well, wasn't one United Nations? But was one not United
No,
Nations?
This was okay. all, this was all under the aegis of the United Nations. But the document that ultimately, the Platform for Action, which was the document that ultimately came out of the conference, was really prepared, written, and generated by the official delegates. Mm-hmm. And initially, it was the plan was to have everybody who attended in Beijing. The Chinese government ultimately decided that the people who attended the forum, and there were probably that's where the 35,000 to 40,000 women are. They moved the forum to a city outside of Beijing called Wairou. And, oh, I can't, but I'll try. I think it was W-H-A-I. I don't know. I'm making this up.
Yeah.
I can find it for you. I have it upstairs. And so the meetings for the forum were in Wairou, and it was about an hour away on a bus from Beijing. And it certainly changed the nature of the conference because the idea was that people who attended the forum could lobby the official delegates to sort of promote their concerns so that the document, the Platform for Action, would reflect the point of view of all this, you know, 35,000 to 40,000 women. Well, that didn't happen in the way that was originally planned, but I feel very sure that the Platform for Action really did. I've read it. Certainly did reflect those concerns of women worldwide. Mm-hmm. And you got to meet people. We have African women, people from every continent, every island, every country in the world, and it was just incredible. Mm-hmm. It was really something.
And how did you speak to one another? Did you have a lot of interpreters?
Well, English is an international language, and there was every place that we went that I can think of was conducted in English, except maybe a couple. One, I think, was maybe in some Scandinavian language, but it was sort of probably simultaneously interpreted into English by people talking.
Mm-hmm.
And then, however, the most moving seminar or meeting that I went to was conducted in French, and it was a meeting held to discuss the status of women in Algeria. And that was conducted in French, and there were just myself and another American there, and we said that we don't speak French, and could they provide us with an interpreter? And there was some woman there who spoke English very well, and she interpreted, you know, they would say what they had to say, and then she would interpret for us. I don't know if this is time to go in, but basically they really discussed the murders and assassinations that were going on by the religious right of various categories of people, journalists, poets, and women. Those are the three categories.
The minorities.
The categories. It's very interesting. Journalists, poets, and women. And it was just a terribly, young girls, I mean, girls 13, 14, 15, 16 years old were being hung and murdered because, you know, they did something that the religious right, the fundamentalist Muslims, didn't approve of, and it was a searing experience. But
did you attend a lot of seminars or
yes.
sessions?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We did.
One was the most outstanding in your mind.
Yes, absolutely. And there were literally probably 800 or maybe 1,000 sessions going on at any moment. I mean, during the course of one day. I mean, you could have, there were...
And these were scheduled?
Yeah, these were scheduled. There was a book of programs.
Oh,
and, like, for instance, we probably began about 9 or 9:30. At 9 or 9:30 every day, there were maybe 150 different choices. And there were, these buildings were all over Wairou. And you could just sort of, you know, there was a map. You could sort of pick out the one that you wanted to go to. And then you just went there and sat in. And that's what we did. I didn't go every day. We sort of filtered around, talked to people, ate. There were just all kinds of things going on.
Yeah.
And we would go. If something looked interesting, we would go. Mm-hmm. And it was really just a remarkable experience.
It does sound great.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And I think one of the things that people ask now is, well, you know, what did you accomplish? And I think that there's certain, what the platform for action can only be implemented by the various governments in any really meaningful way. But I certainly, my own belief is that when I read the newspapers, I see things, news reports of what is going on with women in various countries all over the world, and I cannot help but think that those activities reflect the kind of spirit and point of view that came out of that conference. In fact, in today's paper, there's a story about Iranian women and their move to secure rights for women in Iran, you know, rights that American women have had for generations. And
how far do you think they'll get?
I don't know, but my sense of it is, yeah, exactly. Would that have happened without the conference? Maybe it would have. I have no idea. But I certainly see, I certainly think that that conference impacted on the status of women all over the world. And it made, you know, I think in the, from the most personal to the most global.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I think.
Yeah.
I don't know. Right?
All right, in having read through the notes,
yes,
can you think of other things that you would like to add to this history? I was telling Barbara that I saw Having Our Say at the City
yes.
Theater, and
yes.
it was truly an oral history.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, other than talking heads, they had this cooking thing going on. Which was, I thought, a very clever diversion because mm-hmm. it could become very boring listening to just these two women back and forth sitting in a chair, which happened in the first act. But it was still interesting.
What kind of a cooking?
They were cooking their father's birthday dinner. It was a tradition. I don't know that you want to solve
it. Sounds interesting.
But anyway, it just reminded me of what we were doing and. Mm-hmm. And are we getting everything that you want to have down? Because you're going to have a tape to give your family.
Yes, oh my. Well, I really, everything that I would want to get down, I have no idea. I'm going to be 70 next April, and I can't even imagine beginning to get everything down.
Well, I mean, are there any outstanding experiences that you want to tell about that you'd like your children to know about?
I don't really know. I've never
really
addressed
that. I
yeah.
forgot to give you that to study, to think about.
Well, they have certainly been the great pleasures of my life.
Yeah.
I would say that to them.
I'm
And I don't really know. I mean, I guess one of the things that I, as far as they're concerned, I think that my divorce from their father had a very bad effect on, I mean, it was very difficult for everybody. And I think that, and I feel badly that they had to endure that.
Do they still have contact with
Oh, them? Yes, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, all of them do, absolutely. And, so, you know, I feel badly about that. That was a sadness for them. But,
I think everyone is guilty, has the guilt feeling about
mm-hmm,
that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just think it's just, you know, it's just a shame that they had to endure what, and, you know, I think it's marked them all, and I feel badly about that. But.
You have to get on with your life.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, of course.
Perhaps it will make them think twice about relationships.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know. We'll find out. As a friend of mine said recently, love is just so absurd.
I love it.
That's right.
Do you have any further questions, Barb?
I don't think so. I think we covered an awful lot.
We did.
And Leanne, you've been so open with us.
Oh, well,
totally enjoyable.
And you certainly don't look like you're going to be 70 years
old. Good.
Well, as Bridget Bardot says, age is just a number.
Yeah.
So
well, that's a good point of view. That's the first time I've really said it out loud like that. It's taken me a while to get used to
that. Well,
the
there are 70-year-olds that looked 70 when they were 40 years old because that's their attitude in life.
Yeah.
Well, certainly, I think if you're young at heart, yeah, it reflects in your energy that you project to other people.
Well, that's certainly encouraging.
Yeah. Shall I turn it off? I think we can turn it off.